Hey guys, because of the prep for the Toy Photographers Meetup in Oregon this week, I haven't had a chance to finish editing the latest interview. So, I thought I'd take this opportunity to re-release my interview with the Toys That Made Us creator Brian Volk-Weiss, in celebration of the new episodes that dropped this week on Netflix, featuring Hello Kitty, Star Trek, Lego, and Transformers. I haven't had a chance to watch them yet because I'm recording this before they're out, but I can't wait to see them once I'm back from the meetup. Speaking of the meetup, I have some fun podcast things planned, so stay tuned for those. And in the meantime, I hope you enjoy my interview with Brian.
It's an 8-part documentary series about the toys that we all know. Plastic creations that last for generations and we still cannot let go. Little molded figures that gave us big dreams will go back in time and behind the scenes. It's the toys that made us. Toys that made us. Toys that made us is here.
I was really excited to have you on the show, not only to talk to you, but because you're the first guest that I was able to Google.
Everybody else.
That's funny.
And, yeah, I do research for, you know, all of my guests on the show, and so far they've been fellow photographers, so I'm scrolling through their Instagram to try to get info on them, but you, I was able to actually look up. You know, you have like 229 IMDb credits, my favorite of which is that you produced Weird Al's Alpocalypse album, which is pretty awesome.
One of my favorites, dude. One of my favorites.
Yeah, he's the best. And according to Wikipedia, you run Comedy Dynamics, the largest producer and distributor of one-hour comedy specials in the U.S. How did you go from producing comedy specials to making a show about toys? Have you always loved toys? What was that decision like?
Yeah, it's a two-part answer. The first part is I've always loved toys, and the oldest pieces in my collection were literally the toys that I played with as a little kid. And then when I stopped playing with the toys, I collected them, and then I started buying toys just to collect that I never played with, and I'm a huge toy collector. So that was the first thing. But then, to your point, because we do so much business with Netflix in the stand-up space, I know a lot of the people that work there, and to be honest with you, I just kept bugging them, you know, to the point where it was like, oh, God, I hope Brian doesn't bring up his toy show. you know, that went on for a little while. And then finally I was able to convince him to, you know, basically give it a shot. So they looked over everything we had prepared, and then they said that we should, you know, they basically told us what kind of show they would be interested in. I shot a short tape about 5 minutes long, and that's what they saw that got the show greenlit. And that's how it all came to be.
Did you always want to do a kind of documentary style show where you talk to different people at toy lines, or how did the idea for the show kind of come about?
Yeah, I mean, the idea, well, to answer your first question first, yeah, I mean, I was trying to sell this for 5 or 6 years, so and then it took about a year to get Netflix on board, so it was closer to 10 years than 5 years. And then, I mean, my original inspiration was really simple. You know, I'm a big history buff, and, you know, there's like 1,000 books about the Civil War and 500 books about World War II, if not more. And, you know, Optimus Prime and Skeletor and Snake Eyes are almost as well known these days as the people who are into the Civil War and whatever. And, yeah. Like, there wasn't a documentary, really, about Transformers. There wasn't a documentary about He-Man.
Yeah.
Now, see, people have made documentaries and written books and stuff, for sure, but they didn't have the resources that doing a show for Netflix would have. And that's what I wanted to do. And that's, I think, a lot of the reason why the show is so popular, is because you have all these people who are like, I played with He-Man for 10 years. I had no idea this is how it came about. So
yeah,
that was the inspiration, was there are these toys that affected at least 1 billion people, maybe 2 billion, and no one knows anything about them, except for the geeks like me. So that's what we tried to do, and that's what the original inspiration was.
Well, I think that definitely comes through. The show is obviously made with a lot of love for these toy brands and a lot of excitement about it. I love the energy of the show and the humor in the show. How much of the actual, like, production on the show were you involved in?
I mean, I was involved with everything. You know, I was at probably 75% of the interviews. I was in the editing bay for hundreds of hours. I wrote a lot of the voiceover. I was involved. Yeah, I was involved with every single. I've never been so involved with a show before, because it's basically my hobby that became the show. I do want to say, I did answer your question, but I just want to also add to it. I mean, I was a part of the greatest team that I've ever worked with or ever even heard of in the television business. So, you know, there were dozens of people who helped make this show, and many of those people, had they not been involved, the show wouldn't be as good as it is. So, like I said, you didn't ask me that, but I felt egotistical the way I was answering it, even though I was being truthful. So I just want to be very clear. I mean, I assembled a team, but I was very much a part of a team.
Yeah, you and your team got amazing level of access to these companies that you guys feature, and a wealth of interview guests. What was the process like once you kind of picked which brands you wanted to go after? How did you actually get to go talk to all these people?
So we got the green light from Netflix. We hired the beginnings of the crew, and then we basically just, via Google, found out who the PR people were at Mattel and Hasbro, Lego and Sanrio, and cold called them. We got them on the phone. We told them who we were very nicely. They said, everybody said the same thing. Hey, we're so excited. Would you mind getting us some documentation from Netflix? Because we get a lot of people telling us they're making shows for Netflix or Hasbro or HBO or... And, yeah, we'd love to see some kind of documentation. So we called Netflix. Within an hour, they gave us a letter that we could forward. And we sent that letter to everybody. And like a light switch, everybody, I mean, we got everything we wanted, man. I mean, Mattel, Hasbro in particular, but also Lego, they bent over backwards again and again and again and again. They let us into their headquarters. Hasbro let us interview their former CEO and founders, one of the founders' original children. They helped us hunt down former employees from 40 years ago. They couldn't have been better.
The Lego episode hasn't come yet. When are the next four episodes coming? Can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, in about 4 months.
Okay, cool. So far from all of the 8 episodes, what has been your favorite? Like, what has been the best experience so far? What has been the best company that you've talked to?
I mean, I hate my answer to your question because it's going to sound so political, but there was no best company. Everybody was great. Like I said, Hasbro, Lego, and Mattel, they bent over backwards again. I mean, they didn't really say no to anything. They came up with people who we never even heard of and said, why don't you talk to this person? Or what about that? So there was no best. I would say everybody was tied for first place. And that's just the truth. Like, I know it sounds cliched, but there was no best company.
Hey, I think that's great. You know, I'm glad that you didn't come away from it going, well, I'm upset that we talked to these guys, or I wish we hadn't done this.
Not at all. No, they could not have been more encouraging. By the way, we've heard from almost everybody since the show was premiered. Everybody loved it. Everybody, you know, we got a lot of emails that were like, you guys were honest, and you did what you said you were going to do, and... You know, we told everybody ahead of time it was going to be a very positive show, and we weren't going to be, you know, we did film people and film things that were negative and controversial and not productive to the story. And my entire career before this, that is the kind of thing you would use. You know, you would be like, oh, I got gold. You know, he started crying, you know, but mm-hmm. This show, you know, we had a couple of people start crying. And we didn't use the footage because, you know, like I said, I wanted to make a positive show. It's a show about toys. So this isn't a show about people crying over losing their job 30 years ago. And the companies were all very happy that we told them what we would do, and we did it.
Let's talk about toys a little bit. I think there's been definitely a resurgence of toys recently, toy culture. Why do you think toys speak to us so much, even well into adulthood?
I think it's two different issues between kids and adults. I think with kids, and it's completely summed up in the He-Man episode, I think that, and I have two kids. I have a 2.5-year-old and a 3, almost 4-year-old, and I see it in my children. These kids have no power. They have no control. My kids, when we go to a car, I pick them up and I buckle them into a seat they don't want to sit in. They get driven to a location they have no control over. I tell them what they can eat. I tell them what they can't eat. I tell them when to go to bed. And for these children, toys are really their ability to have some power and control.
Yeah.
And they might not view it that way because they don't know what power or control is when you're 2.5 years old, but they feel it and they understand it. That's the first part as it relates to kids. The second thing for kids is everybody, to a huge degree or a small degree, but everybody has an imagination. And the way to exercise your imagination when you're not good with a pencil or a pen or a paintbrush or whatever, or a football or archery, is with toys. So it's a very easy-to-use way to access your imagination as a child. And that's why I think children are into it, for those two reasons. The reason why adults are into it is because I think the toys remind them of who they were when they had, like, no responsibilities and no fears, and it just reminds them of a safer, simpler time. That's what I think nostalgia, if you break it down. Because if you have a kid who had a horrible childhood, like, he or she is probably not going to want too many reminders of it. But most people probably, I would say, to some degree, have had a good childhood. So being reminded of it in some way is a positive thing.
Going back to your history, you've said that you were a fan of toys your whole life. What toys had the biggest impact on you? Were they the ones featured in the show? Star Wars, He-Man, Transformers, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I wasn't into He-Man at all as a kid. I bought my first He-Man figure about 5 months ago. I mean, the main toy that affected me and was like, without a doubt, if I could only have one toy, this would have been it, was Star Wars. I mean, the movie itself changed my life. I mean, I am in show business because of Star Wars. But, I mean, like I said, if I could have only had one toy growing up, it would have been Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of people would probably agree with you on that one, myself included. Have you always collected toys, or was there, I feel like most people kind of collect them as a kid, and then there's that period where they feel like they're too cool for it, or, you know, they should be spending time with girls or friends instead or something, and then they get back into toys as an adult. How has your relationship with toys been? Has it been steady throughout your whole life, or did you come back to it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I stopped playing with my toys, I saved them all, so I didn't throw them out, first of all. And then, you know, and I was probably buying toys until I went to college. I wasn't really playing with them probably the last 4 or 5 years of high school, but I was still buying them. And then when I got in college, I bought my first toy, which I knew when I bought it would be a collector item for me, and I'd never play with it. And I've been doing that ever since. Did it yesterday. You know, I'm doing it. I'm almost 42. You know, I've probably been doing it for, 38, 39 years.
That's awesome. And hopefully 38, 39 more, right?
Amen.
So this podcast is specifically tailored to toy photography, and obviously it's kind of a stretch to have you on the show as a guest, but since you made this awesome show and you technically photographed toys when you're filming them, have you noticed that toy photography community online at all? Have you seen that?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely noticed it, and I mean, without a doubt, one of the most painful, you know, the first cut that we had for the Star Wars episode was 2.5 hours long, and we had to cut it down a lot, obviously. And one of the most painful things that we cut was, do you know who Kim Simmons is?
Yeah, he photographed all the packaging art for the original Star Wars Kenner toys.
Yeah, so we interviewed him, and it was like just the most amazing story. You know, back then they didn't have computers not only to make the art, but they also didn't have computers to hide, you know, their production means. So, like, those Star Wars pictures from the 70s and 80s, you know, where you'd see the transport ships landing and the AT-ATs walking around and the Hoth recreation, like, he really shot that. Like, that was, like, a real picture where, like, the AT-AT was blocking the strings, holding up the transport ship. And I mean, we've been putting out behind the scenes rough cut footage. We started last week and we did another one yesterday. So at some point we'll put that out, but I mean, it was painful to cut, and it was literally like a 6 or 7 minute section just about the photography of Star Wars stories.
Do you guys have a plan to, beyond the 8 episodes, do more toy lines or more in-depth looks at these kinds of things, or are you moving on to other projects?
We, as it relates to making more episodes or specifically to the art?
Let's do both. First, just the episodes. Do you guys have a plan for more beyond the original 8?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely know how the episodes we want to do next. It's just a matter of if Netflix greenlights it or not. So we're waiting to see if we're getting greenlit. And yeah, I mean, you know, the art plays a huge role in some toys. You know, it played a huge role in Star Wars. It played a huge role in He-Man. Barbie is very detail-oriented with their art. So is Lego. So, yeah, I would definitely love to get more into the photography of the toys going further. I don't know if we will or can, just because we really try and have these episodes be under an hour. But I very much would like to, because I'm a huge buff of the photography.
Awesome. That's good to hear. As a, you know, photographer myself and somebody that loves toys too, you know, it would be really cool to see something like this shed light on the toy photography community and toy photography art and just toy art in general. You know, there's so many different facets of that. So that's cool. Then to wrap up, do you have anything that you could say to our listeners as far as how they should hold on to toys, how they should keep that spirit alive in their hearts, how they should hold on to collecting? And do you have any kind of advice or anything like that you'd want to tell our listeners?
What I would say is, first and foremost, everybody's collection is their own collection. So within reason, it doesn't matter what I think anybody should do. You know, I don't collect anything for money. You know, I don't leave anything in the box. I always take it out of the box. I always display it. And I, like I said, I don't do anything for money. But that doesn't mean if somebody else is doing something for the money that that's wrong. It's just what they want to do, and I respect it. So that being said, you know, my opinion is for any collector, and again, I can't stress this enough, this is my opinion, and that's all. You know, you just got to go with your heart. You know, if something moves you for any reason, you should go for it and try and get into it. You know, the beautiful thing about toys, unlike, you know, collecting artwork or other things or coins or whatever, you know, in many ways, you know, toys is the greatest thing in the world, regardless of if you make minimum wage or if you have $100 million in the bank, because, you know, you can buy Star Wars, you can buy vintage Star Wars stuff, you know, that's $8 or $20, you know, and you can buy vintage Star Wars stuff that's $500,000.
Yeah.
So really, whatever budget you're working with, you know, you can find cool stuff for your collection. You know, that's the first thing. But the second thing is, you know, it's like I say, it's like you just, you got to go with your heart and not, I don't know, I guess I would just say for me at least, I don't think too much. Like, there are certain toys like G.I. Joe or Star Wars where I knew everything about it and I only bought things that I knew about and I collected and I was, you know, very serious, for myself at least, just buying stuff that I liked. Like, I didn't just buy every Star Wars thing to buy every Star Wars thing. Like, you know, like, mm-hmm. I was never into the Dewback or the Wampa. So I never got those. But, like, on the other hand, I was never into Robotech. I don't know very much about Robotech, but I loved the designs. So I have an entire collection of Robotech mechs that are, I really don't even know what half of them are. I just love the design. So it was so that, so within my own collection, my Star Wars stuff is very specific, and I know everything about every piece that I have. And then my Robotech stuff, I just buy the shit that I like, and I don't even know what the names are.
I like that. You know, like you said, just go with whatever moves you or whatever speaks to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good philosophy. Again, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate it. When I reached out originally to the show on Twitter, I was like, yeah, maybe somebody will get back to me, you know, and then I heard you were interested. I was like, oh, cool. So I really appreciate this opportunity.
You know, it's like I said, it's like I could talk about this every day, but also at the same time, like our community is so tight that I just think it's disrespectful to only talk to, you know, Time Magazine or Yahoo News or whatever. It's like, you know, if there are people that are only into this topic, then I want to talk to them. You know, I don't care how big, I don't care how small. The pleasure is all mine, man. And I, as cheesy as that sounds, I really mean it.
Thank you. That really means a lot to me. So I appreciate that. And I will, you know, I've loved the first four episodes you guys released. I really anxiously anticipate the next ones, and I wish you the best of luck going forward and hope that you get to do this a lot more.
Hell yeah. Thank you, sir. Me too.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find new episodes of this podcast and daily articles on creativity and toy photography on our website, toyphotographers.com. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We also ask that you please leave us a 5-star review. That'll help spread the word about the show and help us get noticed. You can find us on Facebook at Toy Photographers and on Instagram at @toyphotographers_. The music for this week's show is by Air Doctor, Lee Rosevere, and Mike Durick, courtesy of freemusicarchive.org. And finally, you can reach out to us with comments, concerns, recommendations, etc. at toyphotographypod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. I'll see you guys next time.